American Welfare, The Raw Deal, written and narrated by Kathleen Franks. I ride the escalator up from the subway. The morning fog blows its cold gray breath in my face. What a way to start the day. If it's going to be cold, I'd rather have it be sunny and cold. Like those crystal blue mornings back home in winter when you wake up to fresh fallen snow. When everything's all brand new, that's how to start a day. I'm on my way to the County Welfare Department in Richmond, California. It's 7:45 in the morning on a late November day in 2011. I'm 15 minutes early for my appointment. I can't help it, I'm from the Midwest. We're bred to be punctual. I've been out of work for a while, and I'm ashamed to say for how long. People from the Midwest pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We're not supposed to be out of work, let alone be so down and out that we've got to go on welfare. I walk 3 blocks to the county offices. A couple, maybe in their late 70s, stand at the door. "It's locked?" I ask. The wife looks at her husband. He leans forward on his cane and says something to her in Spanish. We exchange smiles. More people gather near the entrance. I hear a click at the door to signal that it's unlocked. The Spanish husband pushes it open, and the crowd surges inside. I'm in the first elevator group. It takes us up 3 floors and dumps us out directly across from a large open waiting room. A lady with a microphone announces loudly that we should not line up, but sit down until the class for either food stamps or general assistance is called. Over the next few minutes, the waiting room fills to standing room only as more elevator groups emerge. 2 black gentlemen in cuffed khaki slacks and polished shoes sit down beside me. I overhear one quietly say to the other, "I never thought I'd be here, you know, at welfare, needing a helping hand like this." His friend replies, "Yeah, I know. We worked hard all our lives just to get kicked to the curb." The other responds, "When we were young, Roosevelt gave us a new deal. Now we're old and all we get is a raw deal." I look around the waiting room. A silver-haired Asian grandmother cradles her granddaughter in her lap. A younger Asian couple sit beside her. A white woman, probably in her 20s, sits across from the Asian family. She clutches a big red leather book to her chest with the words "Holy Bible" facing outward for all to see. An elderly man in a crumpled hat hobbles into the waiting room, pulling a metal cart behind him, stuffed to the brim with coats, sweaters, shoes, and plastic bags. He leans against the wall. A door opens and a worker shouts over the din of the room that the general assistance class should line up in front of her. "I'll have to wait for the next call. Today I'm here for food stamps." 10 minutes later, the same woman appears and calls for the food stamp class to line up. A uniformed security officer escorts us through the back offices, past cubicles where photos of family and potted plants and sweaters hanging over chairs make it look like any other office, except for the armed guards. We're taken to a room where rows of long gray metal tables and chairs await us. A woman, no more than 30 years old, stands in front. She wears narrow-legged tan slacks, offset by red high heels. Her straight blonde hair cascades over a faded red sweater. She introduces herself as our class instructor and begins by telling us to put our identification documents and bank statements, if we have them, inside the file folder in front of us. She gathers them up and hands the folders to a lady sitting at a table in the front, who disappears to make copies. "Listen up! This is the class for food stamps. Please follow instructions carefully and don't jump ahead. You will make mistakes if you do. Trust me, some of these forms are difficult to understand. And there's always a few in this class who don't follow directions. Your group is no different from the others that fill this room every day." The first paper we are told to take out of the white packet in front of us is the one entitled Early Fraud Prevention and Detection Information. The class instructor says, "This is the government. If you are caught trying to scam the system, you will be prosecuted up to 20 years in prison. Any questions?" The room is silent. We are told to sign the document and put it aside. "Now," she asks, "how many of you have a permanent address? Raise your hand." I raise mine and turn to look around the room. Less than a dozen hands are up. "Okay," the instructor responds while holding up a paper. "Take this one out of your white envelope now. It's blue. This is the one for those who do not have an address. Those of you who do have a place to call home will have to be patient while the rest fill out this form." It takes several minutes while she makes the rounds to answer individual questions. Everyone has a different circumstance and needs help with the form. When all are completed, she announces, "You can use the county offices as your address now. Lots of people do. You can pick up your mail at the intake window between the hours of 8 to 5, Monday through Friday." The next form to fill out is titled Statement of Shared Housing. The upper half of the paper has several boxes for putting in the names and relationships of everyone you live with. Questions follow as to how much you contribute for rent, food, and utilities, and if you share meals. Multiple lines skip across the bottom of the page for the signatures of anyone over the age of 18 who lives in the household. We are told to bring the completed form to our next appointment. The instructor holds up a double-sided yellow paper next. "This one has questions about your health, your criminal history, your drug habits, and any school you may be attending. Again, I ask that you follow directions. Don't jump ahead." We get to a question about convictions for felonies, including drugs. It's a two-parter. The first has to do with felony convictions. The second part has several boxes to check, with questions about drug rehab programs, possession charges, and other details. The instructor tells us to fill out the first part completely before moving on to the second set. She tours the room as we proceed and stops halfway to hold up an applicant's paper. "Here's an example of what you were not supposed to do. Just because you have been in rehab doesn't mean that you are a felon. But by checking the boxes under the question on felony convictions, you're placing yourself in that category. I told you not to jump ahead, so now you have to draw a line through those answers." A collective groan circles the room. "By the way, if you are accepted into the food stamp program, you will be tested for drugs. If you fail the test, no food stamps for you. Oh, and just to let you know, the maximum benefit for food stamps is $200 a month." We get to the question on school. "If you are in school and not working, you will be automatically disqualified," she explains. "I know that doesn't make much sense, but that's how it is." A young Latina raises her hand and says that she is in school and not working. She explains that she is diligently looking for a job but just hasn't found anything yet. "Well, do you have a little sister that you can say you babysit for?" the instructor asks, and without waiting for the woman's reply, tells her that she needs to find a way to truthfully answer the question. The solution invokes laughter from the back of the room. We get through the entire packet of forms in about an hour and a half. Toward the end of the class, the instructor says, "I know you guys are getting tired of all this. I can't wait to get out of here either. Feels like jail." A guy in the back row says, "Well, at least you got a job and with benefits too." "Yeah, I got a job, but I don't have benefits. They up the premiums. I can't afford him anymore." The woman who had taken our documents to be copied steps inside the classroom holding the numbered file folders. It takes a few minutes while they are distributed to each applicant. Class is finally dismissed, and we're told to sit in the waiting room until our names are called to get our next appointment time. Mine is for Thursday of the following week. At home that evening, I think about the instructor not being able to afford the cost of her healthcare premiums. Later, I mention this to a friend. That's probably her own damn fault for not managing her finances. I'm sure she could afford her premiums if she got rid of her cable TV, internet, and cell phone, friend says. I reply that healthcare coverage can be several hundred dollars a month these days, much more than the cost of cable TV, cell phone, and internet service combined. My friend agrees that premiums are high, but sticks to her argument that the woman should be able to afford healthcare above anything else. I leave the conversation at that. Maybe it's true. Maybe this woman is a lousy money manager. But then again, maybe she has a slew of bills that she's trying to pay off, or student loans. Or maybe she's a single parent and has children to feed, or aging relatives who live with her, or disabled family members. Who knows? All I know is that I've got to get my forms ready for my general assistance appointment on Thursday. Once again, I'm 15 minutes early. Sure, I could have taken a later train, but I didn't want to chance it. The packet for public assistance says in big, bold letters, if you are late for an appointment, even by 1 minute, you will forfeit your application and have to start all over. For a person from Ohio, where punctuality is prized, this is a fair warning. It's another cold, foggy morning. I walk the 3 blocks to the county office and find a bench nearby. The drizzly dampness is not enough to drive me to the shelter of the doorway. A petite black woman in an oversized trench coat sits down next to me. I say hello. She returns the greeting while taking out a pack of cigarettes from her purse. Almost immediately, a nice-looking Latino man with a neatly trimmed mustache approaches her. I recognize him as one of the men from my food stamps class the other day. He sat right across from me. He was one of the homeless who needed help filling out the form. Can I pay you for a cigarette? How much? She responds. 25 cents, he replies with a winning grin. She takes a long drag while he anxiously awaits her answer. No, I don't think so, she replies. 50 cents? Persists. No, I really don't have many left, says. He smiles and wishes her a good day as he goes back to the growing crowd waiting at the door. I can't afford to share my stuff, she says to me. I could use the cash. I only have a taxi voucher to get back. But 50 cents for a cigarette isn't going to help me much. You live around here? I ask. Yeah, replies hesitatingly. Just then a frail white woman, whose weathered face alone tells of her worn-down life, approaches my benchmate. Can I please have a cigarette? No, I can't. I don't have many left. Please, I can give you a bus pass, she barters. The black woman looks over my shoulder to the waiting crowd. Guess he won't see this, she says to me, then taps a cigarette out and lights it for the lady. Thank you. God will bless you. I know he will, the woman says. You've got a good heart. The crowd begins to shuffle toward the door. I get in line. A man with a bronzed face, stuck under a cowboy hat, steps in the elevator with me. His denim jacket and jeans look authentically faded and frayed, not like the fake ones bought by teenagers at the mall. I glance at his shoes. His boots tell a story deep as the wrinkles on his face. I suspect he's not from around here. Then he says, shit! This fog chills my bones colder than a well digger's ass in Montana. I shoot him a knowing grin. Not that I've dug any wells in Montana, but I have spent many a sub-zero day in that big sky country. The routine is the same as the other day. We are told to wait until the class for general assistance is called. I find a seat and pull out a book. I'm reading the former NEA chairman's book, Arts Incorporated, How Greed and Neglect Have Destroyed Our Cultural Rights. I have an earnest interest in promoting art as a way to alleviate societal ills. Call me idealistic.